Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I'm delighted to be here, and even more delighted that you are there listening to us. Just a word about something that we do. Richard and I, through our own work, know that you can connect to any consciousness that you choose to connect to, and that they are able to connect to. And what that means is that if we choose, we can connect to consciousness here on this side of the veil, so to speak. Everything around you has a consciousness. It might not have that logical, deductive type of reasoning that we expect all consciousnesses to have. However, we can connect with the thoughts and understandings of a tree, a rock, a crystal, flowers. And it is just amazing what kind of information they can give you. The histories of areas, people that have come and left the area. If you're interested in history, you could get an awful lot from a tree. And I know that might sound far-fetched, but it isn't. However, we can also connect with individuals who have crossed over to what we call the other side. They still retain their consciousness, and we can communicate with them. They can communicate with us. And it is a case of using the right side of the brain. Science uses or teaches us to use the left side of the brain. And when we know how to use the right side and integrate it with the left side, we then can have this magnificent, well, as I view it, a magnificent connection to different consciousness on this side and the other side. And I wanted to express that because we get questions sometimes from people about what we do. And Richard in particular teaches individuals how to work with this, and he does a magnificent job. Now, we've also been questioned about the people who we choose to connect with on the other side. Now, my point of view is that I wish to bring knowledge, new knowledge, to our listeners. And when a soul crosses over to the other side, they have not exactly a different perspective of their life, but a perspective that has more understanding than that might have more understanding than when they lived here, because they understand the lessons better, the mission that they took on, the path that they chose. So in a sense, our lives are, you might say, shaded to a particular point of view because we're not seeing that path. As a rule, we don't have the connection with the other souls, the other experiences of our soul monad. So there is such a great advantage for chatting with those on the other side, and that is gives you a little thumbnail sketch of what we do and why we do it. And for those of you who have listened to our radio show, you know that I bring along my most gifted partner, business partner, Richard.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, and good evening, everyone.
Since I brought in that little forward about our work, Richard, where could people find out more information about it, that particular aspect of our work?
Well, the best place is the Right Brain Magic website that we have called rightbrainmagic.com. But really, I would encourage them also to go to the 2012 countdown .com website and take a look at your past life page, because the experiences of people accessing their experiences, their past lives through that, really, in a sense, are also an illustration of this work. And some of those experiences are truly extraordinary. If you've not listened to those, I do encourage you to go and listen to those, because truly they are amazing. And you may be drawn to connect with some of that work also.
Thank you for mentioning that, Richard, because I'm thinking about one in particular where an individual loved a brother very much, wanted to know what he was doing now that he was on the other side, and it is a magnificent story, just positively beautiful how the brother connected with her and brought along the family later. So it was truly a beautiful journey. Now, tonight, Richard, we talked about someone that we felt would be of great interest to the audience, and that's Terence McKenna. Can you just give a tiny little thumbnail sketch of his work?
Yes, Terence was a very interesting individual. I suspect that he was not on most people's radar. The people that were aware of Terence during his lifetime, and I was not one of those, I must say. I only became aware of him maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it was perhaps those who were kind of very actively walking what you might consider a countercultural path who tended to be aware of Terence. He was a champion of psychedelics when that was not so strongly frowned on as it is these days. He was into LSD and a whole bunch of other things. Many saw him as kind of taking over the mantle of championing that from, goodness, his name has gone out of my head, the man who championed LSD for a long time. But Terence was an incredibly rich, complex individual. I can only conclude that he had a photographic memory and a prodigious intellect. He was able to track so many areas, not just the interest in the drug scene, but also he was widely read with regard to philosophers, to a lot of current scientific study and knowledge. The man was truly extraordinary in the ground that he covered. And he was commenting about this time that we are in at a time when very, very few were beginning to comment upon it. If you have seen the email that I sent out earlier today or last week, you will see that Terence died in 2000. Now, you know, there are not too many people in the late 90s who were really talking about the time of transition that we find ourselves in. Yes, there were some people focusing on the year 2000 as some kind of transition, but Terence was really not there, and he was talking more broadly about this time of transition. Indeed, he saw this, what you might consider almost headlong rush into the wall on so many levels in this consciousness, this excessive consumption, the dependence upon finite resources that looked to be running out, and so on and so forth, as really symptomatic of what you might expect at this time of transition. And he actually saw all of that as being quite positive, because he actually saw it as being in an inevitable aspect of this kind of time. And when I first began to hear Terence talking about these things, I was amazed that he had this kind of insight. And it was only after I became aware of his work more comprehensively, I guess, through the work of John Major Jenkins, who was very connected to Terence in the 90s, that I began to look at his work more thoroughly. only to find this extraordinary work where he had found aspects of a particular form of the I Ching, which most of you will probably be aware of as kind of you might consider it a soothsayer almost, a forecaster of what might unfold in the future. Chinese in origin. And he found a particular version of this actually, when you analyzed it in a particular way, pointed to this time of transition that we have often spoken about, that is beginning with this December 21, 2012, this coming winter solstice of this year. And so he was quite a interesting character who spoke on many occasions, sometimes for free, sometimes he ran seminars and so on, but a truly extraordinary individual. And as I say, one that was for the most part below the radar for most people because of the kind of things that he was talking about as much as how he was talking about them. So Terence, in my view, is quite a special individual.
Thank you for that, Richard. I thought it was important that people have some feeling of who he was before we begin. And as you are probably aware, as I connect with him, he is here. And I'm sure has a message for our radio audience. So would you be kind enough to connect with him? But before you do, I wish to mention to the audience who are not aware of this that if they concentrate upon this and imagine Terence through the third eye, you might not know what Terence looks like, but just use his name and you can say it to yourself internally and see if you can feel his energy along with Richard as he describes it. So, Richard, be kind enough to describe his energy, what it feels like, and then take his message, if you would.
Yes. So many of the people that come forth on our radio shows express themselves to me with quite a lot of power in one way or another. And in Terence's case, there is not this great sense of power. Rather, there is this gentleness, a strength in a way, but more subtle, almost like a dancing gentleness, almost like an elf, you might say. Very gentle, very light-footed. And I do sense the inquisitiveness and the intelligence that the man carried and still does. And so there is, again, I experience him fairly much central to my experience, a little bit left of center. But this gentleness really would be the overriding experience that I have of him. It's almost like he's been a guide more than bringing activities of great power in the world. And in a sense, I guess that's kind of the role that he fulfilled in the lifetime that has just recently completed. So very interesting energy, quite unlike anything else that I've experienced.
Thank you, Richard. So, is he ready? Are you ready for his message?
I guess probably as ready as I'm going to be. Let's see what Terence has to say. And he's here and he is saying, "My dear friends, when I crossed over, I had no idea that I would ever have the opportunity to speak to anyone in that consciousness again in this manner. I find it truly extraordinary that this opportunity has arisen. Because in many ways, although I felt I was present upon the planet to fulfill a particular purpose, and that was to begin to awaken people to so many things, to so much knowledge that had been buried and hidden in so many ways. For example, the knowledge that the shaman of the Amazon and elsewhere carry and how they access that knowledge. I felt it was important. Indeed, I felt guided to access this ability, which indeed I did, and to the best of my ability, shared with people how to access this knowledge and wisdom and ability. But more than that, particularly as I pursued my work with the I Ching, I became more interested in and focused upon the changes that were beginning to come forth in your world. And I have to say, I felt that I was largely unsuccessful in alerting people to what is unfolding. And perhaps the only flag, you might say, that I was able to raise that in any manner has got into public awareness in a general sense has been my introduction to John Major Jenkins' first book, where I was able to share my insights in a very brief manner as to the power and importance of this date that is coming forth. And at the time I was present on the planet, although I felt it was important, I truly had no idea as to the nature of how it would unfold and what it would mean in its totality. Yes, I had a sense that it was a time of important transition, but truly I had no concept of the scope that was represented by it. My work with the I Ching clearly demonstrated, to me at least, that this was a very, very important transition. And through the work of Jenkins, who I became quite close to through the latter half of the 90s, through that work, I came to understand just how deeply embedded were the messages about this time that in fact were present across the planet. Whilst Jenkins' work has primarily been focused on the Mayan calendar, those of you who have read his books will understand that indeed he looked further afield than this and recognized that there were pointers to this in many cultures, ancient European, Indian, and so on. So this indeed was something that the ancients understood. And as the two of you recognize, there indeed was a much more advanced culture present on this planet from which all of these things derived. And it is not something that Jenkins gives credence to, as many of you may understand if you have read his work. Rather, he subscribes to the view that these, such as the Maya, simply studied the stars over a long period of time and came to recognize these changes. But in truth, this information was handed to them from the Atlantean time. And indeed, this is the origin of it coming forth in many other cultures. And this is something that you may have to help me, Carolyn. The guy that's done a lot of that work in Egypt and elsewhere, Graham Hancock. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The work that Graham Hancock has done across the globe, pointing out that there is an enormous amount of undeniable evidence that has remained pointing to the existence of indeed a very advanced culture in our past history that ended around about 12,500 to 13,000 years ago. And so I have come to understand much of this from my current perspective. And it gives me great joy, in fact, that many of the seeds that I planted back in the 90s have begun to bear some kind of fruit. And some evidence of that is the fact that I am here speaking with you in this manner, because it was Richard that began to turn over some of these stones and begin to understand what it was that I was contributing. There are many who've examined my work that have not truly understood what I was saying and what I wasn't saying. And I would agree that indeed the insights that I had about the pointers that existed within the particular version of the I Ching that I was studying, the King Wen sequence, that this information was, you might say, given to me intuitively. And I have to say, I became very trusting of my intuitive guidance. So many aspects of the things that I did in my life were guided in this manner. And so it is with great pleasure that I have joined this radio show to give my reinforcement, you might say, to this information that is coming forth, and not just from these two that are holding this radio show and bringing me forth in this manner, but indeed the work of many others, particularly Jenkins, who has done profound work with the Mayan calendar, but also others, such as those who wrote that book, Hamlet's Mill, which demonstrated that the precession of the equinoxes is deeply embedded in so much myth and legend. And the choice of that book is no accident, because indeed the story that comes forth in Shakespeare's Hamlet is but a reworking of that myth, that story that is embedded in so many cultures. And so I thank you all for listening to my words, and I will simply say that this moment that you are approaching is the most profound in not only the history of this planet, but indeed of this galaxy and this cosmos. And so it is.
Thank you, Terrence. There are so many questions that I have for you. One of the first ones would be, would you give your interpretation of what will happen at that momentous moment?
There have been many things spoken about in terms of this transition, but truly most do not express this accurately because it is not their place to bring it forth, and they do not have access to the background information and understanding. And from where I stand, I can indeed examine what will unfold in quite some detail. And so what will happen at that solstice is great energies will come to the planet from many sources. And these energies will perform many tasks. The first of these is one of transformation of every particle on the planet, indeed every expression of energy upon the planet, truly transformational. And this, you might say, will begin an extraordinary period of 3 months or so where these changes will come forth. The initial phase of this will see many of those currently present upon your planet crossing over. And this is because they have not undertaken the key preparation they need to do. And that is not referring to the steps that Richard and Carolyn have shared in their work, but more they have not done the background preparation. They have not begun to master themselves or begun to reflect on who and what they are as human beings, or have begun to develop a key aspect of their skills and abilities, which is patience and understanding. And so there will be many that will cross over at that time. Indeed, more than half of the population of the planet, as best as I can see it. And so many of you may be concerned by my words, but I say to you, do not be concerned, because humanity tends to have a fixation with the experience of a particular human life. But life is much more eternal than just the physical expression in that consciousness at a given moment in time. Yes, a human life is precious, but it is not as precious, perhaps, as humanity in general tends to see it as being, because the journey is really the journey of the soul, the journey of the monad, not the journey of a particular incarnation. And so all of those who cross over are simply taking what you might consider the long way home. They need to do some more work in the third dimension to master some of these key skills and abilities and understandings. And their experience in the third dimension will not be as challenging as the Earth experience has been, because the dark are being cleared at the time of this solstice. And indeed, it is a clearing that is occurring not just upon this planet, or not just upon throughout this third dimension in which you are currently residing, but indeed throughout the cosmos and beyond. And so the journey of those who remain in this third dimension and will reincarnate in another third dimensional consciousness, their journey will be perhaps less challenging than it has been on this beautiful planet. And so this is a key aspect. There are other aspects of energies coming forth, such as knowledge and wisdom for those who are open to it, and many other things in this, you might call, smorgasbord of energies which will come to the planet at that time. And this really is the first step in this process. And for those of you that have done the preparation, and by that I mean the preparation that Richard and Carolyn speak about, and that is to acknowledge your Creator, to clear your negative past life karmic energies, and to rejuvenate your physical body. If you have done this work, this time will not seem in any way strange. You will be aware of the energies, but they will not in any way be debilitating or difficult. Understand that you indeed have been prepared for this. Your body is designed for this experience. It always has been. So you will pass through this time that will, you might say, sort the wheat from the chaff. And those who move forward will then go through another key experience, which will see the many strands of DNA that used to be present in the human physical body reactivated, followed by, at the time of that March 2013 equinox, at that event you will see this, what you term ascension process, which is the movement of those that remain upon the planet and the planet itself to the angelic dimension. This essentially is a vibrational shift. And so these are the events as best as I can describe them in the time that we have available. But I will say to you, this is a time to be excited about, which is something that I said many times when I was speaking of this subject. It is a time to be excited about because it truly is a time of extraordinary transition.
Thank you, Terence. I would like your opinion as to what happens when you cross over on the other side. That, I guess the question is really why, when a person crosses over to the other side, do they have a greater understanding of life in general? What enables individuals like you to see beyond that information that you saw when you were here on Earth?
As some of you understand, coming into that dimension involves letting go of so much of who and what you are. Indeed, you forget who you are, and you leave behind so many of your skills and abilities to be present in that consciousness. And these are rules that apply to that consciousness, regardless of who the being is. These applied even to Yeshua when he came forth, though he was greatly assisted in reclaiming those skills and abilities from a very young age. But these rules need to be obeyed by all souls. And so it is a difficult consciousness. Also, it is an experience of what you call linear time. And for the most part, you forget that you are a spiritual being on a human journey. And some of you rediscover this after some time upon the planet. Some discover it quite quickly on some level as children, but most tend to begin to rediscover this when they reach more mature years, perhaps in their 30s and 40s and beyond. And when you cross over, depending on how aware you are, this crossing over can be quite simple, a process of reawakening in a sense, or it can be quite a disturbing experience if you have no understanding within your human experience that you are much more than that human being. And so many of humanity, when they cross over at this time, are in shock because they did not expect to continue to exist. And so a great deal of work is done by beings who are skilled in this process to assist those individuals to, you might say, acclimatize to their new environment, but also to review their lifetime and to understand the lessons that they have learned and to assess their success against their mission. So there is that process to pass through. And for those, as I said, who have a broader understanding, as I did in my own way, although as I reflect upon it now, it was in many ways a very limited understanding. Once you have passed through that process, you begin to recognize the truth of who and what you are. You begin to understand through the tools and the guidance and the training that is available to you that you are much more. You can reconnect with your monad, that totality of your soul. You can reconnect with your creator. You can begin to exercise the abilities and understandings that arise from being in the now, when past, present, and future are all one. And so when you begin to do this, you begin to develop a much greater understanding of who and what you are and the nature of reality in its broader sense, the nature of life in its broader sense, beyond what is a very special but also a very difficult experience called life on planet Earth.
Thank you, Terence. We've talked about perhaps you might look at it as the disadvantages being on Earth, because there are certain understandings that, for the most part, we don't have most understandings that we don't experience. What, in your opinion, would be the advantage to exist in this dimension, which we call linear time? Why would souls want to be here?
It is an interesting question. And there are many that do not wish to choose that experience because it is a very challenging experience always. More challenging for some than others, but always a challenging experience. And the primary reason that souls choose to incarnate upon planet Earth is because of the soul growth that arises from it. Few understand that challenge is the best way. Challenge and difficulty is the best way for rapid soul growth. And in a way, this is acknowledged by the opportunity that exists for those who are present upon the planet during this ascension process, because you will move to a dimension where beings carrying a physical body have never been. And the abilities that arise in that context, as I view it from my current perspective, the opportunities that exist for being able to create using the background energies when you are present in a physical body are unique. And there are many who are very envious of the abilities that humanity will have in that consciousness, in that experience. But everyone that will have that opportunity will have earned it by having spent time, either currently or indeed in past lives, in that current consciousness. And so you might say everyone that will experience it will have earned the right, because that consciousness was created for some specific purposes, and the challenges were recognized in for souls participating in it. And so this reward was also put in place, you might say. So all of this was planned a long, long time ago. But really, the driver for souls participating in that consciousness was the learning and the soul growth and the opportunity to participate in this extraordinary unfolding that awaits you beyond that March 2013 equinox.
Thank you, Terence, for all of this information that you're giving us. I'd like to change gears, if we might. I want to speak a little bit about I Ching, since you did a lot of work with it. I've always been fascinated by the concept. Explain, if you can, what I Ching is and why it works.
It is a very interesting question. There is a tendency for humanity to view consciousness from a narrow perspective, and that narrow perspective is that of an incarnated human being. But as you have discussed, even as recently as the introduction to this radio show tonight, there are many expressions of consciousness. Indeed, all things which exist in any form carry a form of consciousness. And indeed, those that created the I Ching understood this because they were deeply spiritual, deeply guided individuals. And so in its own way, the I Ching carries a consciousness, a great wisdom. And this intriguingly was demonstrated by the introduction to the English translation of the I Ching by Carl Jung, where he posed a question to the I Ching and had it answer his question. And as you understand, he was one of the fathers of psychology. And he concluded that the I Ching, in its answer to his question, behaved as a perfectly sane and rational being in the way that it answered his question. And so I would say to you that there is a consciousness contained within this, and the choosing of the particular elements that you might choose to access a particular reading from the I Ching, that you might consider these to be chance, but of course they are not. There is, in truth, no such thing. And so the accessing of the I Ching is, of course, guided in this manner. Things fall as they fall, as they are guided. And so there is this wisdom that is contained within it, that people access in using the tool in this manner. And so that is perhaps the best way that I can express it. And I will add that I came to understand, as I have mentioned in my book, that there are indeed calendric qualities to the nature of the I Ching. And I discuss that in some detail in my book with my brother Dennis, The Invisible Landscape. And of course, more particularly, we were able to demonstrate that it carried some characteristics which actually pointed to this date that awaits you, December 21st, 2012.
Thank you, Terence. There's many other methods of divination. Does that apply to all of them? In other words, laying out a spread of cards? Would you say that that works also guided by the consciousness of the method that an individual is using?
Yes, I would say that this aspect is held commonly by all of these, though of course they each have their own characteristics, their own strengths and weaknesses, the depth of information that they are able to bring forth. And this perhaps is one of the great strengths of the I Ching, that is the depth of guidance and wisdom and information that can come forth from it, is perhaps the most comprehensive of any of these kind of tools.
Thank you, Terence. And switching gears again, I would like to touch upon plants and the synergy between plants and human beings. Can you give us a little insight into that, since this was of great interest to you?
Most of humanity does not understand the origins of life upon this planet. And when I say that, I refer not just to human life, but indeed to animal life, insect life, plant life, mineral life, every expression of life as it exists upon the planet. And humanity, for the most part, has been persuaded that it was all chance, that the theories that Darwin put forth to explain how these events unfolded in his Origin of the Species is indeed a template that can be used much more broadly to explain the entire unfolding of life upon the planet. And anyone who has looked at this with any thoroughness will truly recognize that this is simply not possible. One only has to look at the exquisite dance that exists in so many places, in so many forms, between plants and birds and insects and so on, so many interdependencies which mean one could not exist without the other, and indeed this occurs in both directions. It is quite obvious that there is no natural selection process that would have developed so many symbiotic relationships in this way. And similarly, the evolution of aspects of the human physical body, such as the eye, simply would not evolve on the basis of natural selection. And so I bring forth that background because this, in a sense, provides a context for the relationship between plants and humanity. Firstly, many of the plants were placed upon the planet to provide food for humanity and for all of the other life in the sense of birds and insects and animals and so on. This was placed upon the planet for this purpose. And indeed, as you, Carolyn, have demonstrated in previous radio shows and elsewhere, these plants, indeed the products of these plants, the fruit and so on, have an understanding that part of their reason for existence is to provide food for humanity and for other animals and so on. They understand that it is their purpose, and they, in their own way, take joy from this experience. And so there is this aspect of that interaction between humanity and plants. More than this, humanity has a responsibility for husbanding the plant life upon the planet, not only the plant life, but indeed so many of the insect and animal species. And it is a responsibility that humanity has, for the most part, forgotten. And I recognize that it was an intuitive prompting of this truth that had me set up the work that I was undertaking in Hawaii to build this, what you might term, a plant bank. Because on a level, I recognize the importance of preserving and protecting some of these original species before the manipulation of so many of these species by humanity destroyed that base stock. And so there are many threads. There is an awareness of humanity by plant life on so many levels, if only humanity were open to it. And there is this role of service in both directions, plants providing their fruits and leaves and so on for the consumption of humanity, and that role of humanity in conjunction with the elementals in protecting and preserving and indeed husbanding the plant life upon the planet. And so there is this complex interplay between humanity and all of the plants upon the planet, some of which has been forgotten. And I will just add that there are indeed some plants that are present upon your planet that were brought forth by those of the dark in their attempt to interfere with humanity. And those plants will not survive the processes which are about to unfold upon your planet.
Terrence, you've been so helpful. We are practically at the end of the show, and there is a burning question in my mind, and we perhaps only have a minute to explore it, and that is what the big drug companies have been trying to do. They're trying to stamp out natural alternatives with plants and other natural things. From your perspective, what do you see as the future for the drug companies, big pharmacia, you might say?
Yes, there is that role of plants as they were placed upon the planet that I did not mention, and that is to provide healing properties, to provide natural healing modalities and mechanisms to humanity, but also to support animals. And indeed, there is a powerful mechanism to deal with any illness or disease that humanity might experience naturally occurring within that botanical world. And the focus of the drug companies has been to entirely discredit this and indeed to destroy the ability for humanity to access this in any manner, because they cannot patent these natural compounds and hence they cannot charge their fees and control their usage. And so it has been part of their strategy and tactics to stamp out use of these in any form. And you are seeing currently in your world a new round of activity to try and shut these things down, such as homeopathic solutions and other things. And I simply look at this as being yet another example of the extremity of experience which is arising as humanity rushes headlong into the wall, not recognizing that in fact the wall will simply dissolve as humanity is about to hit its head upon it. And so the future of Big Pharma, as it's called, the pharmaceutical companies and their control will be no different from the big oil companies. They will simply cease to exist. Neither of them has in truth any reason to exist. And when humanity understands this and pursues alternatives, and indeed much of the requirement for so many of these things will disappear in the new consciousness, all of these will simply dissolve. They have no future. They should never have had a role in your world. And in a sense, their role has been to demonstrate how far off track humanity can go.
Thank you so much for being here, giving us your insight. And thank you, Richard, for your great work and what you contribute. I certainly do appreciate it. I know our audience does too. And so I take this moment to say goodbye to our friends until next week.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, for your contribution as usual. And I acknowledge the challenges that you had being on this show tonight. And there you are. No one would have a clue but for me.
Good night, all.